Everybody can hear me well? Okay. Good morning to you all. I see that some of you have survived last night. That's good. My name is Ophir Arkin. I'm the founder of the C-Security Group, and some of you may have known my work from the previous years that I have presented in at Black Hat. What I am about to speak today is the Xprobe 2 tool and its new release. We'll have a discussion why active operating system fingerprinting tools or other active operating system fingerprinting tools suffer from several drawbacks, issues, accuracy problems, and such. We'll see how we deal with it, how we found some remedies to it, what we've done with the new version of the tool that is available from my website, and we'll see some examples. I would like to dedicate my talk in the memory of True Explorers. I think that the picture speaks for itself. I'll introduce myself, the projects. We'll talk about parameters which affect the accuracy of active operating system fingerprinting. We'll see and we'll examine the new functionality added to Xprobe 2. We'll then, as with previous years, we'll have a demo, and the country that I've picked this time is France. A loved country by all. Then we will speak about the future of active operating system fingerprinting and what are the next moves or next development stages that we're about to take with Xprobe 2. Currently on my website, on the C-Security website, you can download Xprobe 202 RC1, the source code. You can also download a paper named The Present and Future of Xprobe 2, the Next Generation of Active Operating System Fingerprinting. It's a 35-page white paper, which you can use in order to understand the different functionality and how you can use Xprobe 2 better. As always, if someone has any kind of questions, please stop me. If you have questions after the talk, questions now, Rick? Yes, all my papers, even those that I consider now lame, are still available. Are still available on my website. Yeah, I can't run from it. I did write them. No, but that particular paper is still there. All the ICMP papers are still there, and some of the those papers are the base for this talk and the development of Xprobe 2. In order to eat, I also work. I'm the CISO of Israeli International Telephone Carrier. It's a lot of fun. I have also an ISP with a fast connection to the internet. I have published several papers that you may have heard about. If you heard about the Ethernet frame padding information leakage, this is a paper I've written along with Josh Anderson while I was working for AtStake. I have published several IP telephony security related papers as well and other papers. And I'm also a member of the HoneyNet project. So, Xprobe 2 is an open source project which have three developers, myself, Fyodor Yarokin, Meter Kidir Arilev, basically two Russians and one Israeli developing an open source tool. I think it's an ideal thing when you speak about open source. Xprobe 2 is a remote active operating system fingerprinting tool. It is an alternative to other tools, and some of you have voted it at the top 75 security tools survey that was taken recently. And a matter of fact, it made the first 50. Why or what are the usage examples for active operating system fingerprinting tools? First of all, you need to get the right context for things. For example, if you have an IDS system and your IDS system cannot correlate the information it sees with the systems it needs to guard. For example, if it sees an Apache attack, but the IP it goes to is an IIS server, then of course that's nothing that should concern you. Vulnerability assessment tools is another major area which needs the function of good active operating system fingerprinting tools, because if the tool you're using will give you false results, then the results you'll get with the vulnerability assessment will be useless. A lot of people also build a network inventory. A lot of organizations do not really know what they have on the local network. I will show you that using XProbe 2, the new version, you only need half a second to 2 seconds in order to scan one IP address and get its operating system. And of course, there are other creative ways to use the tool and other creative people who use it for whatever they want. The project, as I said before, is an open source project. It reflects our beliefs and ideas. It does not compete with anything. We hope it contributes to the community at large. Of course that we welcome contributions. And we use our spare time to do development. So sometimes I get emails saying, well, on my OS, which is like an old OS that nobody even thinks that it's available still, the tool is not compiling. Well, you know, it's a certain limit to the things that I can compile the OS against and see that it is working. But we try to make it easy for people to use the tool, and there is a certain limit of time that we have. We are all both working on regular jobs and do the development at night. And of course, it's an open source project. A bit of history. The first alpha release, that was a mission statement actually, was released 2 years ago. It was called XProbe 001. It was using a static decision tree. It was doing what it should do, but it was a very, well, it was a mission statement. Last year at DEF CON 10, we have released version 0.1 beta. We have added a signature database, and our major advancement then was adding a fuzzy logic capabilities with the tool. It means that you can match the probe replies that you get to the signature database in a statistical analysis way, and you can get probabilistic guesses saying 90% chance that this is a certain operating system, 50% chance that this is that, and this is something else. Using fuzzy logic greatly enhanced our abilities to deal with situations that for example, certain test case failed, or that the topology we were scanning is filtered, some of the tests failed and things like that. In April of this year, we've released another version, 01 release. It takes a bit of time when you work with two guys that are software engineers to get up in the release numbers. I was so hoping that they will say, okay, we can release 1.0. And instead I got 0.2 RC1. So basically, XProbe 2 uses RFC compliant packets. It means that we don't use XProbe 2 in the payload anymore. We have added a lot of bug fixes. We added some fingerprinting methods. We had a major database update. And we have added documentation on how you add your own signatures. And of course, today we are releasing VO2 RC1. Most of the issues relating to active operating system fingerprinting tools relate to the way they operate, relate to the way they're being software engineered, and also relate to the way a certain guys that write the OS fingerprinting tool understand what they're doing. For example, the issue with hardware-based devices. When we fingerprint an operating system, we fingerprint the array the software reacts to the different tests that we send. When we fingerprint a hardware-based device, we fingerprint the way the device firmware answers our query. This is actually very important because if you don't understand that each device may have its own firmware version and that the hardware-based devices are being identified according to the firmware version and not according to the brand, for example, HP LaserJet 5 is identified according to the EEP ROM that it is using and not according to the HP brand, then your entire database of signatures will be corrupt because, you know, the 450s have or may have multiple firmware versions installed in them. Another good example is with Cisco-based devices. For example, a Cisco 7200 router will be exactly identified as an ARRONET 1100 or 1200 because they both use iOS. And if you fail to understand that little thing, then your database of signatures will be, well, corrupt, and the information that you will be given to the people that use the tool will be useless. I mean, if I fingerprint a Cisco-based device using iOS, what I really need to know that this is a Cisco-based device using iOS and not that this particular brand is a 7200-based router. If I want to know that, I might use SNMP. If I was, well, too stupid to enable that on my core router. But again, if you fail to understand these little issues, then your results will be useless to the people who are using your tool. There is another good example with the Foundry network space devices, the NAT, FAST, and Big Iron family, which basically use the same software version. So what you want to actually understand is what the software version is, or firmware version in that case. If there would be any vulnerability in these kind of devices, then the software version is this thing that you are looking for in order to exploit the vulnerability and not the exact brand. Because if all Cisco devices use iOS, it's a good example, actually, and they all suffer from a small but lame vulnerability, then you need to identify which iOS versions you are using and then to be able to identify the iOS versions. That's something that I think it must be understood. Another interesting fact is the way probe results are being matched. If you are using a strict signature matching based tool, you will be looking for 100% based match for the results you receive back from the host you are probing. If you will not get 100% based results or a perfect match, then the run fails and you don't have any results. If you use a fuzzy logic approach, then you can be resistant to different topologies that you scan against. If some tests will fail, you still produce results, and you produce the best effort match between the results you receive in the signature database that you have. If the tool that you're using is using a fixed number of fingerprinting tests, in theory, the possible matches will be a fixed number as well. Because if there are a fixed number of tests, fixed number of parameters that we are looking for or checking, and the number of parameters permutations will be also a fixed number, then you're looking at possible matches of a fixed number as well. But, you know, to our luck, the number of overall possible matches is still much higher than the number of network elements that are there. But the real problem is that several test classes cannot deliver the expected results. It means that several fingerprinting tests cannot be used in order to find a match against several operating systems. For example, you all know the problem that we have with Windows 2000. Windows 2000 and Windows XP are basically the same TCP/IP stack. So there is a great problem to get the understanding of which is Windows 2000 and which is really an XP-based machine. Another example might be the use of several tests against other families of operating systems and not getting a perfect match. It means that you'll have a group of possible matches, but you will not actually be able to find a perfect match for that. What you really want to use is to use tests that use multiple, they use several fingerprinting tests, which test for many, many parameters and will allow you to find or dissemble a certain group of probable matches into smaller groups. So it also suggests that a better tool for active operating system fingerprinting would use many of these kind of tests that use parameter-rich fingerprinting tests, and that these tests will have a greater effect on the overall test results. I think that the next issue was a very interesting issue as well, the use of a certain fingerprinting niche. For example, Nmap mostly using TCP-based fingerprinting tests, where actually only two of the TCP tests have a great impact on the overall results, and the other tests are much alike with most of the operating systems. It sure does use one ICMP test, but it does not have a great effect on the overall results. If we look at XProbe 2 version 01, it has the same problem. It's using only ICMP-based fingerprinting tests. The overall results are affected directly from that, and sure, there are caveats with this approach as well. This niche fixation thing brings the inability of such tools to deal with situation that the fingerprinting test will not yield a perfect match or an adequate result about a certain operating system or a group of operating systems. For example, if we look at Nmap, it has a problem to distinguish between Windows 2000, XP, and ME. It usually puts them in one group in the fingerprinting results. With the old XProbe 2, you'll see Solaris 2.5 until 2.9 being identified as one group as well. Added to that is the fact that newly released operating systems of the same operating system family nearly do not change the way the TCP/IP stack behavior is done, or that the changes are so small in a certain protocol only that you need to catch the little change between the different versions. But if your fingerprinting tool is using niche tests, you will not be able to distinguish between those little permutations and between those little differences, and the result would be that you'll have bigger and bigger groups as matches, and you will not be able to find an accurate match or a certain match as a whole. This is an example with the XProbe 2 V01. I mentioned the sensorialis issues that we had. Using our ICMP tests only, we were unable to distinguish between the different Solaris based operating systems between 2.5 to 2.9, and we basically identify them as one group. When you run Nmap against Windows NT box, you get very interesting results as well. I always wonder why I get the NT 3.51 result as well. That was the test system that we used. I run against was NT4 SP6A. So, of course, the results that we got here are, you know, a total mess. Another very important issue for a lot of the people that sit here is the inability to determine the exact software service spec installed in the operating system. We all know that certain service specs are designed to fix several security glitches between operating system versions. When we are unable to determine the exact service spec installed on a certain machine, that brings a lot of problems to us. For example, if we want to test the system admins, if they have installed the latest patches on the systems, in several instances, we can go down to our web server farm or to the server room and try to locally log in if we have the password, blah, blah, blah. Of course, that this is nothing really helpful if you have 100, 200, 300, 400 servers in your server farm. What you want to do is you want to verify that your Microsoft system admins did actually patch the systems for the correct service spec level, and you want to do that not telling your system administrators, because you want to check what they have done. So this inability to identify the exact software service specs is also a major problem. The way that OS fingerprinting tools are being designed, there are several fingerprinting tests that may have a bigger impact overall over the overall results that the tool produces. If this test fails, it much affects the tool's results. So as I said before, if you use fuzzy logic, then your results will be much more resistant to the environmental effects. But if the kind of tests you are using do not have much parameters as in their own tests, then the test results will be really lame, and you will not give any added value to the user using your tool. This is an example of running XProbe 201. Here we used all of the modules that were available to us. You can see that the match was given for Microsoft Windows XP, whatever version, and Microsoft Windows 2000, whatever version, as a 100% match. If we go now, excuse me, and we omit the ICMP echo fingerprinting test, which is a very important fingerprinting test for distinguishing between Microsoft-based operating systems and Unix operating systems, and even between Microsoft ME and Microsoft Windows 2000 and XP, we can see that now we get ME is a perfect match as well. This example also shows another command line option that we have added that I'll be speaking about later. Basically, we have added two command lines that control which modules you can execute. One, the minus D, control which modules not to execute. And the other command line option, capital M, control which modules to use. So you can decide based on the topology you are on. For example, if you are scanning a web server, to use only fingerprinting modules that will be effective against the site that you're scanning. Different networking devices may also affect your scan. For example, if you have a packet shaping device between you and the target, if, for example, your local switch writes the type of service field value because it puts you in a different VLAN or gives you a quality of service, certain firewalls are able to rewrite certain field values as well. For example, Checkpoint Firewall 1 with Application Intelligence is able to rewrite the time to leave field. It's able to rewrite other fields as well. So basically, if you go through these devices or these devices guard the target that you are fingerprinting, then the results that will be produced will be, with less effect and will be less accurate. And of course, we know the problem of firewalls. I mean, you cannot expect to scan each site or machine connected to the internet, and that machine will be totally open. Of course, that more and more people use firewalls, and of course, that on major websites, firewalls and other niche-based devices will be guarding the website. So most of the probes will be blocked. If the tool you're using malformed packets, for example, if you decide to send a SYNFIN scan against a certain website, and that website is being guarded by a stateful inspection firewall or a dynamic inspection firewall, then you will not be able to bypass the firewall. Your test will be useless. It also goes through to all of the tests that use several combinations of flags for TCP. They will be useless against most of the websites out there. Sure, there will be working against the your machines on the local end. But if you use this kind of test against an internet website which is being guarded or being which is a firewall is being filtering the traffic to it, then most of the time the test will fail and the firewall will not let this weird combination go through. Some operating systems also allow to change several kernel-based parameters. They are called tunable parameters. If you are familiar with the NDD command on Solaris, the CCTL command on the various BSD and such, you're able to change certain behavioral patterns with the way your TCP/IP stack is responsive to several probes. If your tool of choice is using these kind of packets and the target, the system admin of the target has changed the way the stack is being answering those probes, again, the results that you will get will be problematic. The following problem is one of the major problems that active operating system fingerprinting tools face. The problem is the quality of the signature database. If you cannot test the signatures that you are going to put in the signature database and you are not going to make sure that the signatures you enter are correct, then the entire, whatever you do with the tool, even if you implemented it correctly and you have the best of breed methods and everything will be useless. Because if you test and if you add signatures that were submitted on ours or are submitted that say, well, I have tested this against against a site being defended by a certain firewall. I mean, who cares? If I cannot test the signature in a lab environment and I cannot be assured that the signature that I produce for this certain type of operating system is actually the signature for that particular operating system, I'm not going to put that in my signature database. Sure, I'll have a smaller signature database, but it will be much more accurate than anything out there. The problem of getting these kind of signatures from all over the world is that, of course, you cannot know if they were obtained in a correctly manner, and they corrupt the entire signature database. I do not know what's the filtering being done on a certain device that was fingerprinting. I cannot know which certain parameters were tuned on that particular host. And therefore, tools that do use submissions to enhance their the number of fingerprints they're using also suffer from a corrupt database as well. Question, someone? It's either you drank too much or, okay. So a good example for this is if you look at NMAP's signature database, and I'm giving NMAP as an example because it's, the other tool that does OS fingerprinting there. If you look at the end-of-line TCP option, you'll find that in some signatures in the middle of the option list. I mean, if this is an end of line, how the hell it goes into the middle of the option list? It needs to be only at the end. So that's an example for not understanding how to produce the signature database or to produce a signature. And of course, this these signatures are corrupt, and if you get the perfect match for them, it's very interesting how you get the match for that. Another issue that greatly affect, it's not greatly affect, but it's an issue that, for example, vulnerability tools should be aware of is the exact platform that the target machine is using. For example, if I use FreeBSD on a Spark-based machine, or if I use a FreeBSD on an x86-based machine, the way I exploit certain things will change from platform to platform. So I need to know what is the exact platform the target is using, and not only the operating system, in order to take into effect the value that this operating system fingerprinting tool is bringing to me. This is especially important on Solaris-based machine, dedicated hardware or operating systems that can be installed on different platforms. If you have a big network, and you want to scan the network, say you have a Class B network because you assigned a whole Class B when you built a company, and now you know it's hard to change the classes that you're using. It's actual war stories of how a corporate is being built. You know, we come and say, well, we need to assign a certain class here. Oh, well, what the heck, we'll assign the whole Class B and then we'll have to deal with it. So then the deal with it comes to, well, you know, let's have a flat network and we'll not subnet it. And then, you know, all those kind of things, and you end up with a messy network and such and such. So this happened in too many companies. So you come with a tool and you want to scan the Class B, and you want to know which kind of systems do you have, because you know you're new to your job, or you want to do an audit or whatever. So you take a tool and you try to do a Class B full scan. At the end of the day, you don't get any kind of results. And why? Try to multiply 1,500 by 6,500, and you get a very nice, I think it's nearly 100 million packets that you need to send if all the addresses on a Class B are taken. So, and of course, if you use a very fast scan that just send these 1,500 packets per host, during a period of like a second and a half, I think you'll be happy to know that your switches and routers will not be able to take that kind of packet stream. So it's not just about knowing to send the packets out, it's about to control the stream of packets you're sending, it's about minimizing the number of packets you send per IP, and of course using the minimum packets per, to produce accurate results. Questions? Yes. XProbe 2? 7. Ah, the 1500? That's Nmap. If you use default Nmap scan, that's 1500. Yes, but even if you give it, try to give it a port number to use, that doesn't really matter. It will go to scan other things as well. And the fact of the matter is that you don't have the ports open or closed because you don't know what actually you have there. So you can assume several ports to be open or closed, but at the end of the day, if you use it by default, it's 1500. If I use my tool by default, it's 7. So you have to do port scanning. I can do port scanning as well. The port scanning part of Nmap is directly connected with the fingerprinting part. You cannot decide that you do not want to do port scanning and you want to do only the fingerprinting part. If you do not provide the ports open or closed, it will do full port scanning in order to get the ports. If you don't find the UDP closed or open ports, it will do a port scanner. What we did, and you will see that later, is we completely took the two parts apart. It means if you want to use the port scanner parts, that's fine, and then we will tie the port scanner and the fingerprinting modules together. If not, then fine, you run the fingerprinting test and it used 7 packets and produced the results that you need. So it used smart correlation between the two and not just, you know, scan whatever. I've been talking about this following point for like 2 years now, the ability to totally control the execution of models to be used. If you are scanning different terrains, if you are scanning different topologies, like I said, if you want to use only a certain fingerprinting model, you need to be able to do that. You need to be able to control the models you're using. If you don't want to trigger alarms or lame alarms on IDSs and such, you want to use something that will allow you to totally control the different fingerprinting models and their execution. What you also want to have is a certain intelligence with the tool. It means that you want to initiate the scan, and if the scan is being blocked, you want to switch tactics. It means that if you are scanning something and you hit the firewall and the scanning just fails, you want to try a different scanning tactic in order to be able to get the results from the site. Questions? Yes. There are several situations, like in web servers, that you actually fingerprinting the load balancer and not the actual site behind it. What you need to do, and we didn't put that functionality now, you need to look at the app level only, because you're not interested in what the stack-related things would be. You are only looking at the app level, and you would like to initiate app-level-based fingerprinting test when you do that. Part of the things that I'm going to speak about as future development is to try to correlate between the condition that you're scanning in and to with your exact fingerprinting models. It means that if you're scanning a heavily fortified internet website, then the tool will be able to understand, of course, through you programming the tool, that it is scanning something that is being protected, and will use only the fingerprinting tests and the fingerprinting models that will be much more successful in producing results against, for example, port 80 or port 443. Any other questions? Yes. Of course. Well, you have mentioned that here. So, with a new version of XProbe 2, the fingerprinting or the results it produces outpaced any other tool that is out there, matches or better than any other tool that is out there. This is on a local LAN condition. On an internet website's condition, it depends. Again, I'll show some examples. Basically, we produce very accurate results against web servers now as well, because we have added TCP models as well. The next level of the development will include dependencies, some of the stuff that I've mentioned to Robin here. So I'll talk about that a bit later, but again, equal or better than any other thing. This is the list of features that we have added to XProbe 2.02 RC1. Sure, it looks like a grocery list, but at the end of the day, it greatly enhanced the tool's accuracy. We have added several new discovery models. We have added the ability to control whichever model you want to use. We have added TCP-based fingerprinting model. We have also a port scanner. We control the sending stream of the port scanner to whatever you want. We have an automatic calculation of receive timeouts for different modules execution, and we have built the signature database from scratch. I'm going to show in the next several slides how these changes affected the accuracy of the tool, what we have done with the different edit functionality, and how, for example, the automatic calculation of the receive timeout greatly enhanced the tool's ability to produce fast results. Discovery models of XProbe 2, which are basically three, allow us to perform host detection, firewall detection, and provide input for the automatic receive timeout mechanism. Sure, we didn't add new things here. I mean, TCP ping and UDP ping are things that we all know how they work and everything. The TCP ping and UDP ping do not being executed by default. If you want to use them, you're using the minus P command line option to provide an open or closed TCP port and a closed UDP port. And the discovery model works by waiting for a reply from the targeted host. The RTT from these tests are then being used for the receive timeout mechanism. I'll explain that in a bit. We have also added two new command line options that I've mentioned, the minus D command line option, the minus M. The minus D if you use a -D command line option, you can specify which XProbe modules not to use, and if you want, if you use a -M, you specify which modules of XProbe to use. This is the map of the module execution order of XProbe 2. You can see that we have three discovery modules, we have two information gathering modules, and we have six different fingerprinting modules currently implemented with XProbe 2. Basically, by default, except for the TCP ping, UDP ping, and the port scanner, all of XProbe 2's modules will be executed. We can see that we have added the TCP handshake, or this kind of thing. TCP handshake module is a TCP module that we're using. The following example is an example of using the -D command line option. You can specify the module name that you want to omit by the module name or by the module number. Here, we have omitted two fingerprinting tests and still got an accurate result, fingerprinting a Microsoft Windows 2000 server with SP3. You can see that we can uniquely identify Service Spec 3. We can also uniquely identify Service Spec 4, as well as 2003 Standard and 2003 Enterprise. The -M command line option specify which modules to use. Here you can see that we only used three modules: the ICMP Echo Discovery module, the ICMP Echo Request Fingerprinting module, and the Port and Reachable Fingerprinting module. By using these three modules alone, we were able to identify Cisco iOS 11.2, 11.1 100%. It also means that in order to get a perfect match, you do not need always to use the entire fingerprinting rooster of XProbe 2. You do not always need to use the entire fingerprinting test or the entire models. If you're using, if you are fingerprinting a website which is guarded by a firewall and you want to target specific tests, you have the complete control over the tool. You can fire up whatever fingerprinting test you want or whatever models of the tools you want in order to produce the results, and still you will get 100%, 90%, whatever percent you will get against that particular test, since we're still doing the same things just with less or less models. This is an output of the -L command line option, which also lists the different XProbe 2 modules. It also gives you a list of which command line options you have. You can see that several command line options were added. I'll show the examples in a minute. We, since we knew exactly what are the different problems that we have with XProbe 2.01, we try to find a TCP model that will give us much effect on the different fingerprinting results that you produce. We have examined different TCP-based fingerprinting tests, and at the end of the day, we have decided on adding the TCP fingerprinting model based on the TCP handshake process. Why using this kind of model, and why using the TCP three-way handshake? First of all, you're using something that will always work against an open port. You will not be filtered. If you're not overloading the test with useless things inside the test, then you will get always results from a probed open port. The parameters that we use with the send request we're sending basically resemble the Linux telnet request. It's always being answered, so we don't have the problem with sending falsified information and being dropped by a firewall. We are examining different parameters inside the SYNAC received from the probe system. We do that for the IP and TCP layers of TCP/IP, and basically currently we examine nine different parameters, and with O2 release we will be able to examine two other parameters, which are the timestamp values. If you look at the timestamp values, you will be able to clearly identify Windows-based machines Windows-based machines out there. What you will need to look at is to look for the 00 combo. It means that whenever you probe a Windows-based machine with a scene, the SYNAC that you will receive will have the TCP option, two zeros for the timestamp values. This is a test that we're going to put in the O2 release, and that will help greatly enhance the abilities of Xprobe 2 when it's being fired up against internet websites, and then it will be able to understand if this is a Microsoft-based operating system or this is some other Unix operating system. The following run was produced with Xprobe 2, omitting the TCP handshake model. As you can see, the Sun Solaris-based operating systems are fingerprinting the same. And when we have used the TCP handshake model, we have a clear winner here. That was a Solaris, Sun Solaris 8-based system. And we have a 100% based match, and the next match is 93%. So we are now able to differentiate between that group. It's not only the Sun Solaris-based machines, but it also other operating system groups that we are now able to differentiate between. The TCP handshake model greatly enhanced our ability to produce a smaller number of possible matches, except for threesome group. We were able to either give you 100% for two or less operating systems. It means that except for OpenBSD 3.1 to 3.3, all the results that you will be receiving will be either one or two operating systems as a match. Since you, we rely on open and closed port information, we had the idea that we need to add a port scanner to allow people who wants to do port scanning as well the capability of doing that. There are some people who wants to do port scanning and they don't know which are the open and closed ports that they need to use. So we added a port scanner as an independent model to Xprobe 2 O2RC1. The way the port scanner works is very simple. You use uppercase P and uppercase T or U. You specify the ports, nothing new here, and you get the results from the port scanner with the results of your OS fingerprinting. You get a list of open or closed ports and also stats about all the ports that you have scanned. This is actually a run against HPUX 11.0 based system. Yes? Sorry? Uh-huh. Yes. But we do think on testing that as well, but, you know, that's for future releases. Yeah. What do you mean large information output? This is something that we're going to do in the next release. Basically, if you look at the signature database, each operating system and each service pack has its own entry. What we're going to add is we're going to add I'm going to speak about it, platform-specific and OS-specific tests. So if you want to, if you know that this is a Microsoft-based operating system, you will be able to fire up only the fingerprinting tests that are applicable for Microsoft, and to look for in the signature database only for signatures of Microsoft-based operating systems. So you'll not have the noise in the background about all the other operating systems as well. Knowledge about open and closed ports will be used for other models. Currently, the TCP handshake model and the ICMP port unreachable model will get information from the port scanner if it is used for open TCP ports and closed UDP ports. So if you don't know what to put, or the defaults do not work for you, you can use the port scanner, and that information will be put to those models. Usually, well, this after I installed like 150 OSs in the past 2 months, you'll see that you can find an open port quite easily if you use a certain list like 21, 22, 23, 25, 37 is a very nice nice port, especially in OpenBSD. 53, 80, and I bet I forgot 111 and 135, 139. I bet you find some open port with that list. Of course, if you do web servers, that, you know, port 80, port 443, and that's it. If you want to do a full port scanning, again, you can use the tool. That's fine. That's not a problem. We're using hashing with the port scanner. Nothing new that we have invented, actually, that was invented back in 1998, if you don't know. Again, that's another functionality we have added. We have a relationship between the different minus P and minus P command options, the uppercase and lowercase. The uppercase used for port scanning, and the lowercase used for specifying open and closed ports. This is the way it's been done currently for O2. We'll have a better scheme, which means that it will be more tightly integrated. If you put input for the lowercase minus p, it will override the uppercase minus p, and if your test will fail, will go and grab an open port or closed port discovered by the uppercase minus p by the port scanner, and then use it as an input for the TCP handshake and the ICMP unreachable models. One important thing that people do forget about port scanning is that you cannot just throw packets on the wire and expect devices to give you accurate results. You cannot come and say, okay, I'm on a local network, so I'm going to, excuse me for the word, puke 1,500 packets, and then I look for the results in a second and a half. That doesn't work. Because if you are on a corporate network, your switches will go down if you scan too many IPs. Switches will drop stuff, or the routers will drop stuff, and the results that you will receive will be inaccurate. On a large corporate networks, you have usually congested traffic. If you don't do your subnetting correctly, if you don't have VLANs, you'll see a lot of noise on the network. Your networking-based devices will be congested with a lot of broadcast traffic, with a lot of noise. So if you add to that noise, well, sometimes you will not be answered. Why? Because that's too much for the networking device to handle. Or your networking device might be lame and will not be able to answer these kind of packets too fast. So again, the results that you will be receiving will not reflect the accurate accurate results from that machine. By default, we are having a time interval of 10 milliseconds if you're not specifying the lowercase S option. That option controls the sending stream of packets. It means the controls the time interval between each SYN packet scan and each UDP packet scan. If you know that you're scanning a target on a congested network, you can use the minus S to put the a bigger time interval between the SYN and UDP packets sent, and also the minus S command line option, as I will show you in a minute, controls the timeout for the port scanner. So if your network is congested, if you know that you cannot scan too fast, or even if the host that you're scanning has rate limiting in them, for example, try Nmap against FreeBSD 4x and up. That would be great to see how your screen just fills up with rate limiting information from the FreeBSD machine. And you know what? The results that you will get if you hit that rate limit will be useless, because the FreeBSD machine will just slow down its pace. It will, at the end of the day, will not send all results to your probes, and your probe will be useless or partial. Try to do that against a Cisco. That's not a nice thing to see. So this is an example for scanning too fast. Here we have scanned for UDP ports 516 to 520, and TCP ports 20 to 30. And you can see that the last TCP port is registered as filtered. But when we have added 40 millisecond time interval between each since packet sent, we can see that now the results are all clear. There are no filtered ports. This is, again, an example of how you shouldn't or how you should interpret the scanning results, because sometimes you see in the results some patterns you need to take notice about. This is a good example for that. Our automatic calculation of receive timeout, we basically have three different receive timeouts for the discovery models, for the port scanner, and for the fingerprinting models. We scan an IP address on a local network in half a second to 2 seconds. The discovery models that you are using basically will have their RTT. We take the longest RTT because, if you didn't know that, TCP will answer slower than ICMP. ICMP always answer the fastest. We'll take the longest time that it took a discovery model used, and we'll multiply it by two. The RTT X2 will be used to as the receive timeout for the fingerprinting models. For the discovery models themselves, one can use the minus -tcomline option, and he can specify the timeout millisecond for them. For the port scanner model, we have a certain formula that we're using. Basically, what we're doing is we multiply the number of ports you're scanning with, if you use the minus -tcomline option, plus 10 as the default, 10 milliseconds, and then we add the RTT X2. So it means that now it works. It means that we have the entire time for doing the port scanning and still waiting for the last packet to arrive. If the number of packets we have sent equal to the number of packets we have received, basically the timeout is reached, and we do not wait the extra time for the RTT to be finished. Any questions about the automatic receive timeouts? The last thing we have done is to rebuild the signature database from scratch. As I told you before, it was really nice to build at least 150 based operating systems from scratch, especially those 1.3 NetBSDs. That was a bummer. Yeah, the OpenBSD 2.4 wasn't nice as well. It was ugly as hell. I had to set some FTPs around the world, and of course they don't have these releases anymore, so I'm all glad I did that last year. Basically, all of the signatures of the tool were obtained in a lab environment, or that I have abused my friends across the country and went to their labs and got some of their equipment installed from scratch. As I told you before, this is a mandatory thing for us, and all the signatures were obtained in a lab environment and are accurate. And of course, after we wrote the signature, we have tested it against the machine and made sure that the signature we have entered is correct. By doing this, we are now able to clearly and uniquely identify 2003 standard from all the other stuff, 2003 enterprise, 2000 SP4, and 2000 SP3. We have signatures for the entire Linux kernel branches of 2.4, which basically is three different fingerprinting groups, and 2.2, which is basically the one. I've also bravely installed 2.0. That's very interesting to compile them. My Slackware 2.035 based kernel, bravely installed on a Celeron 400, but that was it, I guess. We have a long list of other operating systems that we're fingerprinting, starting from FreeBSD 2.27 and up, OpenBSD 2.4 and up, NetBSD 1.3 and up, and Cisco's and other like AIX and Foundry and other things. Questions? Yes. But of course, no. You have a document in the distribution called "How to Edit." Well, I don't remember the exact title, but it lists how you edit your own signatures, and it is being updated. I don't think the manual page is good for the new release, but the "How to Edit Your Own Signatures" is good and was updated, and we're also going to add a command line option that will produce that automatically. Again, if you are going to produce signatures, do that in a lab environment or against systems that you control and know how they are being configured. So, yes. If I had a mainframe, that I can go and do that. If you offer me yours, I'll be more than happy. But being serious now, no, I don't have access to mainframes. Usually, the companies that have mainframes do not like people coming and scanning their mainframe or whatever. So, I used to have, but I don't have the. If someone here has a mainframe and wants that signature, I'll be more than willing to explain how to do that if he approaches me. More questions before we see the demo? Okay. So after the demo, yeah, just a sec. After the demo, we'll see what are we planning to do next. Yes. Sorry? Of course not. You will add your own signatures to the database. You can always save another file with the original fingerprinting. You can specify using the -C command line option which signature file you want to use, and just play with it and see what kind of result it gives you, and then decide if the signature is good enough. Of course. See that you get 100% on optimal conditions, and then consider that as something that is can be added. And if you want, you can email me. I'll be more than happy. Thanks. Yes. Yes, I'm also on the Onionet project. I heard that question more than once. I do have some tricks in my sleeve for that, but still not ready to share that with the masses. Sorry about that. Other questions? Okay, so since 3 years ago, I cannot go to China anymore, and since last year, I cannot go to Iran. Well, I wouldn't do that if I was silver, whatever. We're going to do a very nice country that respects her tourists, especially if they speak English, and they have blonde hair and blue eyes. So, our first stop is Radio France. Of course, I want to hear that lovely language and just educate myself about the stuff that's happening there. Radio France is using kernel 2.4.16 or the group of between 2.5 and 2.4.16. Nothing much to write home about. What you can see here is that we have scanned for ports 20 to 40 and 80, and that whatever ports were open, kind of interesting, port 37. After visiting Radio France, decided to take a course at the Sorbonne, which is a very distinguished French university. Here I have specified which models I do not want to use. I didn't want to use the ICMP Echo fingerprinting model, also not the ICMP timestamp and ICMP address mask and info request, because they're useless in several situations on the internet. And the Sorbonne is using SAN Solaris 9. I guess they are not using any American technology in France. After finishing my education, I decided to take a job opportunity down at France Biotech. France Biotech is using a Windows 2000 server, which I wasn't able to clearly identify which, but again, not using American technology at all. Here you can see in the results that there are filtered ports. It means that there is a firewall guarding the website. After doing my master's as a Sorbonne and having several years of working at the France Biotech, I decided that I need to go and see what the Ministry for, what was that, the Environment can do for me, since the environment is so nice there. This, again, Microsoft IS5. Here you can see that we identified this as a Microsoft Windows 2000 server SP3. I guess they need to upgrade. And the last site that I decided to visit, since I want to know more about the current politics in France. Not that that's really interests me. Yeah, this is the Prime Minister, if you didn't know. I didn't. Actually, the site of the Prime Minister of France is using another American technology. It's being actually hosted by Akamai Networks. So that's very nice. Akamai, if you didn't know, use their own web servers, basically based on Linux 2.2. Here you can see another example for disabling several fingerprinting models and using others. Here you get a better match for the fingerprinting you have done. So what is the future of active operating system fingerprinting? I'll go to this slide and I'll try to explain it here. Currently, whatever tool you're using is basically sending whatever information against a certain target without having any kind of intelligence. It will use the tests. It will not understand what are the dependencies. It will not understand which tests failed. It will not understand what's the terrain it is being scanned. Well, what's the terrain it is using? What's the terrain it is scanning against? And what other things it should use? For example, if you use several host discovery fingerprinting models and several models fail, there is no reason whatsoever to try these probes again. If you detect that there is a filtering device between you and the target, there is no need to do several fingerprints. So one of the things that we're going to implement with O2 release, and that we didn't have the time since we implemented so many other things for O2 RC1, is dependency between models. It means that if a certain model that another fingerprinting model depends on or needs the input from fails, we will not run the fingerprinting model that depends on the failed model. If we know that a certain operating system family has been identified and we need a niche-based OS fingerprinting test to dismantle the group into a smaller group and to have one result only or two results only, we'll use a niche-targeted operating system fingerprinting test. As this gentleman has asked me before, yes, we're going to have specific options for scanning for a specific operating system and using different tests specified for different operating systems. It means that if you would like to scan only the Windows-based operating systems, or you know that you have Windows-based operating systems and you want to match and use the tests that are designed for Microsoft or are best for identifying Microsoft-based operating systems, you will be able to do that. Another thing that we're going to implement is the ability to have some kind of intelligence between the different modules, not only dependencies. So, for example, if I use the upper and lower case P options and do a port scanning and do provide an open or closed UDP or TCP port, and the lowercase minus p overrides the uppercase minus p, and I fail, and I do fail with my test, since the port I have specified is closed, we will then use the knowledge from the port scanner, and we will do the test again, hopefully successful, since we have learned that the TCP port was open and the UDP port that we're using was closed. So a lot of things to allow a successful run will be added. A lot of things to resist well-fortified internet websites will be added. Dependencies between modules will be added. And, of course, the intelligence of the tool will be greatly enhanced. I mean, this is a very nice slide, but it's actually a lot of work. All the enhancements that you have seen for O2 RC1 were made in 2 months' time, real hard work. And as I said before, this is an open source project that we use our own spare time to do that. We do give credits to the people that helped us to do our work. We do feel that they deserve the credit. If you want further reading, if you want to understand more about the things that I have presented today, you can go to my website. All the white papers are there. You can download them. The new code for the tool is there. The new white paper is there. If someone have any question, I can take. Goes once. Yes, Rick. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I didn't understand what you said. Right. Mm-hmm. Well, you can specify whatever you want. And, well, the idea is not, well, first of all, you need to define who's going to use the tool. No, if you don't, I mean, if you don't know how to use it, I'm not making a tool so every script kiddie can go and download it and it work. You need to understand a bit what it is doing. I mean, if you don't want to do the port scanner thing, it doesn't work. By default. But if I'll start guessing what my users will be using or what my users are going to do, I'll never be able to optimize the tool. So they may want to license the tool. If they license the tool, I can speak to them about that. Any other questions? Thank you for being here this morning.